episode at peacetalksradio.com. You can hear all the shows in the series there too, including those excerpted here today. There too you can sign up for a free podcast, a newsletter, order CDs, read partial transcripts, and see photos of our guests, plus link to other useful resources on all these conflict resolution topics. That's peacetalksradio.com. Go there too to help support the series with a tax-deductible contribution to the nonprofit media organization that produces this program separate and apart from your public radio station. This program is supported in part from a gift in memory of Nathan Lavin, whom we are told would have appreciated the themes explored on Peace Talks Radio. In addition to that and other funding from listeners like you, we receive support from KUNM at the University of New Mexico. Nola Daves-Moses is the executive director of Good Radio Shows Incorporated. Ali Adelman composed and performs our theme music. For Carol Boss and Suzanne Kreider, I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.
KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again. And that means brand new metal merch. Go to kboo.fm/metal to check out all KBOO's new metal merch featuring exclusive artwork provided by local artists and musicians at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March Metal merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kboo.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Tonight, our guest is Al Bradbury, editor of Labor Notes and a participant in the upcoming Portland Troublemaker School. Welcome, Al.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Al Bradbury has a special relationship with KBOO's Labor Radio, as many moons ago, she was a co-host. Al is also a musician, and that's her song and voice you heard introducing this program. Al was also a staff organizer for Portland-based Service Employees International Union, SEIU Local 49, and she went on to become a staff member of Labor Notes and is now their editor. Portland's Troublemaker School is an offshoot of the Labor Notes Conference. To begin, what is Labor Notes and what is a troublemaker school?
Labor Notes was formed in 1979 to bring together the... Well, hang on. Let me restate that. Labor Notes is the voice of workers who want to put the movement back in the labor movement. We're a magazine. We're an organizing project. We have a conference and trainings online and in person. It's sort of, you know, many tendrils of work. But the idea is a network of people who are building stronger unions, more fighting unions, more democratic and, you know, people who want to make the world a better place by building a strong labor movement. And it got started in 1979 as a coming together of reform movements in several unions. So at that time, there were people in the auto workers and in the Teamsters and in the mine workers who were building internal union reform movements, trying to make their union fight harder and run more democratically. And they sort of each existed as a current within their own union. But the people who started Labor Notes thought, how can we help build a sense that they're all current within the larger labor movement, that they're all together part of something bigger and hear about what each other are doing and learn from each other? And so they started this newsletter to just let people know what's going on in that other union, what might you learn from or try again. And then not long after the founding of Labor Notes, the employer offensive really began. So Chrysler came and asked for concessions for the first time, which is like hard to imagine. We just think that's normal now. The employer comes at bargaining and tries to take things away. But it used to be that wasn't the norm. People expected every contract was going to get better. And so when Chrysler came to the auto workers and said, you have to give things back or we're holding your jobs over you, that was shocking. And the union gave in. And then other employers were like, we could do that too. And then not long after that, Ronald Reagan fired the striking air traffic controllers, and that sent this giant signal to employers everywhere that with open season on unions. And so there was really this assault that started from the employer side, and the terrain really shifted. And Labor Notes, through that and up to the present, has been a place where people come together to figure out, how are we going to deal with this? Like, what's going on? What's coming at us? What strategies are you trying? What's working? What are the roadblocks you're running into? And so we started to have these conferences, which began small and have grown bigger and bigger to the point where now, like, we have to fend people off and turn people away. We can't fit that many people in the hotel. So the last one, I think there were 4,700 people in Chicago, and the next one, they're every 2 years. The next one's coming up in 2026. Where people come together from around the country and really all over the world to, you know, teach each other skills, talk strategy, sing together, you know, sort of like build a you know, our spirit as movement and our strategy and our tactics. And then at some point, as these big conferences got bigger and bigger, people started to say, can we do something like that locally, you know, on a smaller scale to really build solidarity across unions, across the rank and file of unions and worker centers and other related groups in our area. And that's what the Troublemaker School is. So the Portland Troublemaker School, and we've done them in many places, it's a one-day conference where people come together for skills trainings, for workshops, for panels, but also just to connect with their fellow labor activists in the community.
So why call it Troublemakers? I'd call it Troublemakers. And what does putting the movement back in the labor movement mean?
Informally, we have this T-shirt, the Troublemakers Union, with this logo with a slingshot on it. I think a lot of activists who have, who have sometimes been like a thorn in the side of their union leadership, who want to do things differently and better, who, you know, want to get people more involved, are sometimes termed troublemakers. You know, the boss might label you a troublemaker because you're standing up for your rights on the job or for your coworkers, you're getting things going. Sometimes your union leader labels you a troublemaker because, you know, you're shaking things up, you're challenging them for power. So a lot of people, I think, in the labor movement sort of have been called that and wanted to turn it around and say, this is a badge of honor. You're like, yes, we got to make trouble. We got to make good trouble. The world's in trouble and, you know, we got to shake things up. So I think being part of the Troublemakers Union is sort of a way to say, you know, we're part of this group of people who aren't satisfied with the way our whole world is, or, you know, or even with the amount of power we've built as working people. We have to figure out how to build more power. And I think that's what putting the movement and the labor movement is about at base, right? It's about being, you know, interested in more than just the interests of our own workplace or our own coworkers, that we're trying to fight for the whole working class. You know, what does that mean? That we're going to link arms with each other, we're going to, you know, set our sights higher. Like, how have we made a better society over time? It's been labor fights. And I think actually at the moment, as we're seeing so many of those labor victories under assault, at the federal level, especially, though not only, you know, they're coming after a lot of things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and Department of Education, you know, a lot of things that our movements and our labor movements specifically have fought for and won. And to keep those things, to defend those things, to strengthen them, build a better postal service for the people, you know, that's going to take a movement, not just each union thinking about its own interests, but all of us really standing up for the principle that an injury to one is an injury to all, and showing up for each other in all the ways we can.
This is the sixth Portland Troublemaker School. The first was in 2015, and they have been held every odd year in the spring, while Portlanders have traveled to Chicago in even years for the National Labor Notes Conference. Last year, the 2024 Labor Notes Conference was the biggest ever. At 4,500 people, the most racially diverse and the youngest crowd. The Portland Troublemaker Schools are mini versions of the National Conference, like you mentioned. So what do you hope to replicate about the National Conference in the local Troublemaker School?
You know, people come away from the conference and say that the biggest thing that they get out of it is the sense of being not alone, the like renewed energy and hope and optimism that comes from being together with people who are, you know, who are all pulling in the same direction, that you're, it can feel very isolating, you know, day to day on your job, trying to, you know, help people through their fear, trying to cope with the latest thing the boss has thrown at you, trying to sort of build something. We run into a lot of obstacles in organizing, right? There's a lot of roadblocks. It's very hard. It's very emotionally draining. It's very, you know, it's dispiriting. And it's hard to keep going. And being together with other people who are doing the same thing, who like relate to what you're dealing with, who have ideas about how to deal with it, but who also just like are on the same page. It's a big dose of energy. And so that's what people get out of it, even more than the, you know, great new ideas and tactics and stories, I think, is that sense of solidarity. And that's what people get out of it most on the local level as well. The other thing I'll say, you know, you mentioned it's the sixth one, and it's so interesting. In Portland, and I've noticed this in other cities where we've had troublemaker schools too, every time, you know, at some point we'll ask, hey, show of hands, who was at your first troublemaker school? And I think probably most people have been to this before. We've done it a number of times. But no, it's always a large number of new people. So I think it's also, it's an entryway. It's a place for people who are just getting involved in the labor movement for the first time to like find their way in and find their people, as well as people who've been at it a while to, you know, reconnect and re-energize and to teach what they've learned to others.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. You're listening to Al Bradbury, the editor of Labor Notes and a participant in the Portland Troublemaker School. If you find this interesting and helpful, KBOO is a listener-supported, community-sponsored, non-corporate radio station. We could use your financial support. Go to the website at kboo.fm and make a contribution. So the Portland Troublemaker School expects about 400 participants to convene at McDaniel High School from 9 to 4 on Saturday, May 3rd, with 20 available panels and workshops. So let's walk through some of the workshops and describe to our listeners what they mean, what they're about.
Sure. So where three of them are the workshops in Labor Notes' Secrets of a Successful Organizer series. And we've got a book of that same title, and the workshops are the same idea as the book. So the first one is Beating Apathy. And it's really about like What do you do when you feel like there's nothing going on in your workplace and you're the only one who seems to care about, you know, trying to fix the problems that are there, and you try to ask people to do something and they're like, I don't know, I think I want to go home. I think I want to get involved. And it feels like, does nobody else care about this? The idea of the Beating Apathy workshop is really, how do you get through that? Because people do care. Like, it's very unlikely that people in your workplace don't care about the raise, don't care about the abuse they're taking from the boss. There's other obstacles in there. There's something hidden under the surface that's keeping people afraid or discouraged. Maybe I'm giving away too much of the workshop, but it's about how do you figure out what's really holding people back and get started from, you know, from sort of square one, or when it feels like you're stuck. To get your coworkers into motion. And, you know, it starts by talking with people and really listening to people. Assembling Your Dream Team is the second workshop in that Secrets of a Successful Organizer series. And it is really about mapping out your workplace, figuring out who else is there, what strengths might they bring, how are they networked together, what are the groups, what are the, you know, who's showing different signs of leadership, how do you bring together a team to organize. Organizing is not a solo pursuit. And that's a really fun workshop, I always think. And then Turning an Issue into a Campaign is the Swinging into Action one, about you've got your map, you've got your group, you know, you may, like, figuring out what's a good organizing issue. What's a, you know, when a problem comes up on the job, how do you know if it's one that you might be able to win with an organizing approach? And what does that look like? And, you know, what steps might you take? How do you map out a series of escalating tactics so you don't, you know, use up your strongest thing too soon? And that is also a really fun workshop because it's a chance to draw out people's experiences and ideas, and, you know, sometimes funny, sometimes devastatingly effective things people have done to unsettle their management and win what they need on the job.
I should tell our listeners here that our largest workshops are the Secrets of Successful Organizer workshops, and they will be, some of them will be led by Al Bradbury. So y'all come. Go ahead, Al.
And then I know there's also a workshop on marching on the boss, which is an ever popular tactic. One of the most effective ways you can win immediate results on the job when there's a problem, which is getting a group of people together and marching up to your, you know, immediate manager or the person who could give you the solution and demanding it. And there's, you know, people have done this in many workplaces over a long time. There are some useful things to know about, you know, how do you plan it? What are the roles? How do you, you know, what might the boss do and how do you be ready for that? There's nothing like it in terms of experiencing like a shift in power in your workplace, because it's actually very easy to unsettle managers. They are delicate creatures. You know, they'll be unsettled by the smallest thing, and a group of people marching up and demanding something will totally throw them off. And you can win instant results in a way that can be much more satisfying than filing a grievance, going through months of back and forth and waiting for paperwork to process through. Or sometimes it's a great thing to pair with a grievance action and a grievance approach. Beating a Bully Boss, I think, is a self-explanatory and always attractive workshop. Perhaps there are no bully bosses here in Portland, but I would be surprised. And assertive grievance handling is about how you turbocharge your grievances, not just wait for the paperwork to process through, but think about an organizing strategy that complements the grievance, how do you make it as powerful and effective and drive it forward as you can.
And what about workshops for people who are not in a union but would like to organize one at their workplace?
There are two sessions planned specifically on this theme. One is a panel on unionizing your workplace, where folks can hear from workers in a variety of workplaces who have done it at New Seasons. The ILWU Local 5, I believe, is the Powell's workers, Burgerville workers, and Starbucks workers. So workers in a variety of retail settings right here in Portland who have organized, unionized, and one contract in many of these cases, how they did it. And then there's also an introductory workshop, Everything You Wanted to Know About Unions But Were Afraid to Ask.
So beyond basic workplace organizing trainings, what else is planned?
There's one on safety, both the direct action and bargaining dimensions of safety, which you know, is a critically important topic in every workplace. You know, a variety of different safety challenges we all face, from ergonomic challenges to the impacts of climate change and extreme heat and weather on our jobs to violence. I can't think of a single workplace, honestly, where there aren't critical safety concerns. So safety is one. There's one on open bargaining. A traditional way some people might think about bargaining being conducted is the bargaining team is chosen by the union. They go off into a room with management. They let you know when it's done, and then you vote on the contract. But many unions, members have been finding that it is both more satisfying and democratic and more powerful and gets a better result if you don't abandon the power of the workers and leave it to a few people to do it, but if you, in fact, make bargaining something that the membership as a whole is involved in all along. So a piece of that can be how do you collectively develop demands? How do you have a conversation across the whole membership about what do we want to win in this contract? What's important to us? It can be about people showing up to bargaining. What does it look like for management if the union doesn't just have its five people who always sit down and bargain with you, but a whole group of members from the shop who have come to watch and to testify and to, you know, shout and to listen in? What does it look like, even in some cases, to invite members of the community who might care about what's at stake in your bargaining and who might want to hold this public employer, for instance, accountable for how it's behaving? So how do you, like, really turn the tables on the power dynamics of bargaining and make it something that everyone's a part of and use the people power that you have? And then there's one on organizing for a strike and contract campaigns that win. I'm excited about what local examples may be featured in this one, because I know there's been some exciting and powerful strikes. The Providence nurses and other healthcare workers recently, what a thrill to see their bravery and what they were able to win in their recent strike. There's one on how and why to form a reform caucus in your union, which there's such a renaissance of union reform going on right now. I think a lot of people watched and were inspired by the auto worker stand-up strike a couple of years ago, which, you know, where like that was the product of workers having decided we're going to transform our union. They had, you know, they had this terrible leadership at the national level in the auto workers, who it turns out were totally, you know, engaging in deal making of the worst kind with the employers. And people might have responded to that by just being despairing and giving up on the union. But instead, people said we ought to have direct elections, and, you know, and pushed for that, and won direct elections and elected a very different leadership and ran a very different kind of contract campaign and won huge amounts from their employers. We've seen a few examples like that in different sectors around the country, and I think with the increased leverage and with the sort of new reasons for anger that we've all had, it's been exciting to see people building these groups within unions in all kinds of industries who are saying, you know, we could demand more, we could build a better union. It could start with us, and you know, and I know that happens at the national level, but also at the local level within local unions. And there's many examples of that here in Portland. All right. There's a session on member-led unionism. How do we build unions that are run by their members and not solely by their staff, union staffs? And there's one on deportation defense, which is close to my heart. I live in Seattle right now. There are two union members who are being held in ICE detention in Tacoma. At this moment, there was a big rally just recently, the local labor movement coming out to demand their release, a worker at the University of Washington and a leader in the farm workers union, Familias Unidas. And we know that employers are coming after, you know, more labor activists trying to terrorize people into accepting worse conditions and shutting down organizing. We can't let that happen. This is one of those bedrock principles, right? An injury to one is an injury to all. And I think we've seen over the history of labor in this country, people have to figure out over and over again that the newest wave of immigrants are not the enemies of their fellow workers, that, like, the way that we build power is by uniting. I don't have to tell you all that, but I'm heartened to see that in this terrifying moment, unions are really getting down to brass tacks about how do we defend all of our members and, you know, figure out how to keep ICE from getting hold of them.
And will there be discussions focused on particular sectors of the workforce?
There will. I love this part. Yes, there will be breakouts after lunch for school workers, for healthcare workers, for federal workers, and for logistics workers. So if you're in any of those groups, it's also a great chance to connect with people who may be at different employers, but with some of the same specific sectoral concerns.
And any workshops on struggles outside the workplace?
There's one on bargaining for the common good, which means bringing things to the bargaining table that the employer might not be used to see, more than wages and benefits, more than shop floor conditions. What about the impact of your work on the local community? What about the environmental impacts? What about racial justice? Bringing all those things to the table, working with groups beyond your union. There's one on unpacking the state budget and fighting austerity. And there's one on how to tax the millionaires to fund education. I'm so excited to see this again. This is a big fight in Washington as well. And I am sure in every state, especially as they come after our education funding at the federal level, we need to rise to the challenge at the state level.
Sounds like a very exciting day. I know I'll be there. Will there be childcare? What about breakfast and lunch? Will there be a social? And how about translation into other languages?
Yes, there will be all of those things you mentioned. There will be childcare. There will be a light breakfast. There will be a full lunch included in your registration fee. There will be translation into Spanish. We've also have several Spanish language trainings from the Secrets of a Successful Organizer. And there will be a social afterwards to unwind and network with your fellow troublemakers.
So how do our listeners register, and what is the cost?
Register at labornotes.org/events. You can see a list of all kinds of upcoming Labor Notes events there and scroll to the Portland one, click on it. The cost, if you can believe it, is $10, which is amazing. That probably doesn't even cover your lunch, but this is because many unions are sponsoring and helping make this possible. And if your union is a sponsor, by the way, then it's free. The sponsors are listed on the website. There's a number of local unions, including the AAUP, the postal workers, the Clackamas faculty, Longshore Local 4, iron workers, laborers, Portland teachers, Reynolds Education Association, SEIU 503, and the Washington Education Association at Riverside. If I just mentioned your union, you can come free, but you still got to register so we know how many people are coming.
Well, any final words for our listeners?
Portland Troublemaker School, May 3rd. It's a Saturday. Register at labornotes.org/events. Support KBOO Labor Radio. This is such a great program. And if I can just make one other plug, Labor Notes has now started a podcast as well. So if you search Labor Notes, you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts if you're a labor listener, which you are, because here you are listening to this.
Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Al Bradbury, editor of Labor Notes and participant in the Portland Troublemaker School. Thanks to my co-host, Laura Wadlin. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio. This Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
This is Peter Himmelman. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
This is Bird Note. Glenn Albrecht grew up in a bird lover's paradise in Western Australia, where the calls of Western rosellas, golden-shouldered parrots, and gray fantails gave him a rich sense of place. But when he saw how coal mining displaced communities, polluted the air and water, and decimated bird populations, Glenn lacked the words to describe his emotions.
The philosopher Wittgenstein once wrote that the limits of my language are the limits of my world. if that's true, then if you create more language, new language, you actually expand your world.
So Glenn created the concept of solastalgia in 2003 to describe the pain of witnessing environmental harm where you live. He defines it as the homesickness you have when you're still at home and your home is leaving you.
I want to disrupt business as usual, and the way I'm doing it is with disruptive language.
Glenn imagines a possible future era called the symbiocene, when human activity will once again be fully interconnected with the ebb and flow of the rest of nature, and therefore cause no more destruction of life on Earth. He says the massive declines in bird populations are just one sign that we need to expand our imaginations about how we coexist with all forms of life.
Instead of being depressed about the future, we can have radical anticipation of a future that we ourselves are creating.
For Bird Note, I'm Nick Byard.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Hey, KBOO listeners. Come join us Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. here at the station for KBOO's April Fools for Fools First Friday Arts Walk for the extension.